All right, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. Socially Connected 360, number 18 is in the house. We have a wonderful guest, the principal for Dareff High School, Mr. Mike McCool himself is on our show. It's going to be a great conversation talking about all types of things from education to overcoming struggle to why education, leadership, Husky Nation, COVID-19, you name it. We're going to be talking about it on number 18, starting now. All right, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. Socially Connected 360, number 18 in the house. Like I said earlier in the promo, I got someone today that I look up to, someone that has risen to a position of leadership, Mr. Mike McCool from Dareff High School, the head principal there. How you doing, sir? How's everything going?
Hey, it's great to be with you tonight. I'm honored to be here, man. I'm proud of you. You look up to me. I look up to you, man. I won't be like you when I grow up.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think you got a harder task than me, but.
Civil servant like yourself, man, diversified. I love it. I love what you do in the community, your presence, your style, your flow, your impact. You've always been a pleasure to work with. And I see it directly. I reach out, touch it. And type of guy I like to surround myself with. So I'm honored to be on the show, man. Thank you for having me. It's amazing.
Appreciate you, man. And you seem a little bit tired. I know we talked earlier. It was like you got a lot of stuff going on. School's about to start. We'll get into that. But hey, it is what it is. You know, I got to get working, right? Because school's coming back and we got some dogs. We got a guest.
Stop, man.
Husky Nation is in the house.
Right.
Hold on. You brought Husky Nation in the house, man.
Dogs barking in the background. They know, yeah. It's time to ride.
That is not they a know. Cue. I did not press my button on my mixer here, my audio mixer. That was perfect. Husky Nation is in the house. But listen, let's get right into this. So early life. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man. I know a lot of folks know you in the community. A lot of folks know you at Dareff on the east side. But tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Yeah, I'm one of the things I'm very, very proud of is where I come from, my roots. I'm a son of Syrian immigrants, immigrated to this country in the mid to late 70s. I'm a child of 2ND, you know, growing up in Little Syria on 2nd Street in the 6th Ward. You know. And if you don't know, you probably know about it. Second Street was a great time growing up in the 80s and 90s of just really hardworking parents. Mm-hmm. Instilled in us great values. And it was honestly like a network of people. I remember being able to walk from the 400 block of Second Street to the 700 block all the way down the front. And you knew everybody, everybody knew you, everybody knew who your parents were. It didn't matter if you were Syrian, if you were Puerto Rican, Dominican, Black, white, Polish, Romanian, it didn't matter. I mean, it was a very ethnic neighborhood back then, you know, mm-hmm. Ukrainians. It was very culturally diverse and rich, but it had that old school neighborhood vibe to it, you know. Everyone is kind of working hard. The urban vibe, you know, the urban vibe.
Yeah.
People just getting by. We were all we were poor in resources and in monetary and tangible type things, but rich in love and rich in like kind of community sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, playing baseball with aluminum bats and tennis balls in the church parking lot.
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah, you know, whatever football you can get, you know, you play from telephone pole to telephone pole. You cut the boundaries with different lines in the sidewalk and stuff like that. You know, yeah. I'm really, really proud of my upbringing because I feel like I had that classic childhood, you know. But coming home to seeing really hardworking parents, you know, from day one, they just instilled in me that American dream mindset, you know, that meritocracy type mindset. You know, if you work hard, you can make it here. Nothing standing in your way but yourself. No excuses, you know, and they dealt with obstacle after obstacle. Limited English, limited education for sure. You know, factories open, factories closing, employed one day, unemployed the next, living check to check. But we always had food on the table, you know, and that sort of thing. We always had enough food to feed the neighbors, you know, and vice versa, you know. And so I loved my childhood growing up in the old neighborhood, man. And all along that path, you know, my parents instilled in me in that mindset of, you know, I always tell the story, you know, I remember one day very distinctly, I can like paint the picture in my mind. My dad came home after working in the factory all day, working overtime, any chance he got. And I was all excited to see my dad, like, hey, daddy, whatever. And he was just so tired, man. He leaned over, unlaced his boots, and he took this deep breath. He's like, son, how was school today? Oh, it was a good day. It was good, dad, you know. We were afraid to get in trouble back then, you know, like crazy. It better have been a good day.
Right? Yeah.
That was the only answer, you know. It was a good day, dad. You know, were you good? Did you, you know, do all your homework? Yeah, I'd done my homework by that point, you know. He lets out a sigh. He's like, son, get your education. Stay good in school. Do well in school. Don't be a jackass like me and work with your back. Get an education and work with your brain. Whatever you learn, no one can ever take away from you.
Wow.
You know? Get an education, son. Work with your brain. Don't be a jackass like me and work with your back. You know, and he said it in Arabic, you know, but that lesson never left me, you know. I tell that story to my kids, you know, I tell that story to my students all the time about the value of their education and what they're getting and the opportunities that they get that maybe we didn't get when you and I were growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
And to cherish that opportunity and make the most of it, because what you put in, you get out. And once you get it, no one can take it from you. Mm. I firmly believe in that. So, you know, it's all about, you know, doing the best that you got. Now, of course, you know, I grew up in the street too, you know, so I was a punk every now and then. I got a little bit of trouble, but, you know, you dust yourself off, you know, you get up and you learn lessons, you take a licking, you keep on ticking, you know.
I got my
fair share of, you know, serious style butt whoopings, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Man, that's powerful, man. So we're similar, man, because I said this before. I went to the food bank down there in the ward, and it's a Syrian food bank, and you know which food bank I'm talking about. And I talked to the elders there, you know, because the police department helps them out sometimes, and we go over there and I talk to them and I say, you know, very similar, Puerto Ricans and Syrians, right? And he looks at me sideways like, what you talking about? And I looked at him like, oh, damn, I think I messed up. I said, well, I said, you know, old school. I said, my parents came here like you all came here and your family came here and worked hard and did everything they did because they wanted a better life for us. And so when I see elder Syrians, I see, it reminds me of my elder Puerto Ricans, you know, because that's why they came here. And for your dad to say that to you, man, that's just powerful, man, because he changed the whole paradigm, your whole paradigm, like shifted your paradigm, you know. But you saw hard work, just like I like my parents, you know. I saw hard work every day. Every day we went out there, we you know, I saw hard work, my dad working hard, you know. And so, but that's powerful, man. So you know, that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, overcoming struggle. But I see you have a placard behind you or a picture. So you end up good. Did you go to Daref, right?
No, I went to Sheridan Elementary School.
Okay.
Went to Morton. Uh-huh. And then, you know, again, my parents, you know, working hard, saving every penny they got, they wanted to buy us a bigger house. And we were outgrowing our house. There was five of us in our row home on second. And I go back there and I see how wide my house was. And I was like, wow, you know. But they bought enough money to buy a little ranch house in Fullerton. Literally, the backyard is the boundary to Allentown. Like,
oh, wow.
This far enough to be on the other side, right? But close enough where you could smell the pita bread from Second Street. Like, yeah. I literally looked over the balcony. I could see Second Street from my parents' house. So they didn't want to leave too far. But they wanted to give us a little bit more space and stuff like that. And I remember thinking, like, my parents' house was like the dream house, man. We had an above-ground pool in the backyard that my dad worked on. So I ended up graduating from Whitehall. But that's where I ended up graduating. But, you know, you stay close and tethered. All my cousins went to Deerup and uncles, and, you know, so it was always a very strong connection between the Deerup community there, you know, even though I graduated from Whitehall.
Yeah, man. But that's, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Whitehall, Deerup, Allen, I mean, we're all together, you know, let's be real. We all play basketball. I remember playing against, I remember Pete Lisicki. Did he go to school? He didn't go to school with you, did he? Nah, that's way back.
Pete Lisicki is a little bit older than me, but he's like a big brother to me.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Really good friend. Really good friend.
It's a small world. You know what I'm saying? That's what I mean. It's still community within a community. And we all have rivals, but we all still, you know, try to love each other. And you're an Allentown guy anyways, but, real quick, why education? I see, you know, obviously you're in education. I see your rise. Why education? Why did you choose? I know that your dad told you to work on your brain and to get an education, but, you know, as a kid, did you really take that in like that?
Well, as a kid, I didn't know that I wanted to be a teacher till late. I mean, you know, when you do those personal, who, you know, who am I, you know, all about me, like little flyers and things like that. I dug one out in my mom's house a long time ago. Mm. And for some reason it said I wanted to be an electrical engineer.
Ah.
Cause I remember when I was little, I used to take apart like little cars and stuff and try to put them back together to figure out how things work. I was kind of fascinated by all that. The operations behind certain things, like how does this wheel spin? How does this do that? Whatever. So I, for some reason, when I was little, I thought I wanted to be an electrical engineer. Mm. And then I evolved, and, you know, you go through traumas in your personal life and people touch you, you know, they impact you so profoundly to help you overcome something that, you know, going through that time and that developmental stage of your life is so impactful and so powerful. Mm. Look at that person. You're like, wow, what you did for me, I want to do for others. Like, you look up in that person, you know, at those people, and they're like gods to you, because without them, I mean, you just respect everything that they've put into you. You're like, how can I not be influenced to want to be like that? If that person made me feel that way, man, I want to be that for others. And at different really pivotal points in my life, when I needed it most, I was blessed, and thank God I was, with incredible adults that impact me at the right time, in the right place, and in the right way. And that just inspired me to, like, kind of pivot my mindset and want to do that for other people, particularly young people. Mm. And so in high school, in the latter part of high school, we had this kind of like this teaching observation program that we started, where the high school seniors were able to go down to elementary schools and just observe in classrooms and get to know what it's like to be a teacher and things like that. It's kind of,
oh, that's cool.
It really kind of piqued my interest. So I thought going into college, even though I was undeclared, I thought I wanted to go the education route, but I wasn't really focused, to be honest with you, my early couple of years of college. And so I shied away from how prescribed the program was, but I didn't veer me off from wanting to get into the helping professions. So my bachelor's degree is in human development, because I wanted to understand our development, really. What makes people tick? What makes people think and act a certain way? So my major was in human development and family studies, and my minor is in children, youth, and family services. And I went to Penn State University. We are, baby.
I saw it behind you.
Right there. Yeah. That's my number one. That's my heart. And so that was what my bachelor's degree was in. And so I come out of college and I start working for a company locally. You definitely have heard of them, Cornell Abraxas. And I worked in Lehigh and Northampton County Juvenile Probation as a non-residential care community-based case manager for adjudicated youth. You know, I was kind of drawn towards kids who struggled, kids who have made mistakes. I wanted to kind of help them kind of get over that hump. And so our job was to help them with, like, you know, individual service plans, at, you know, getting back in school, right, getting them jobs, helping them with their family dynamics, working with the parents, helping them kind of. And I loved it, you know, doing curfew checks and just making sure the kids were right and doing right and just upholding their probation parameters to get them through that next stage and to on the right track. I love doing that. And then as a young, vulnerable guy, I fell in love with a girl who lived in Boston and
wow.
Yeah. Everybody plays a fool sometimes.
Wow.
So I followed my heart to Boston and I became a counselor in a school for kids who were dually diagnosed and also had some issues and struggled. It was a very specialized program in school. I was able to implement some really cool kind of therapeutic programs in there, some adventure-based counseling programs, kind of fun stuff to get them to look at life a little bit differently. But then, you know, family reasons kind of drew me back here to Lehigh Valley. And then I was blessed with an opportunity to get back into school. And that's where this thing came from.
Mm.
I went to Lehigh, got my master's in special education. That job made me feel like I need to know more.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn more. And I wanted to specifically learn how to work with kids with educational disabilities or just disabilities, things that impacted their learning, you know. And Lehigh has one of the best special education programs in the country. And I ended up working in one of their field-based programs, got free tuition. Again, blessings, man. I was just at the right place at the right time and met the right people.
Wow.
I put me onto these opportunities. You know, it's a poor kid from Second Street, you know, and I got an education, a master's degree from Lehigh for free, man.
Wow.
I mean, it didn't just come like that. I had to work. And go to school, but you know, hey, the one of the benefits of working in their field-based programs is you got tuition reimbursement. So it was a blessing. And then I stayed on and continued. I worked at Centennial School of Lehigh University. Again, it was an approved private school for kids. And you know, we've received kids from 40 different districts in the South Pennsylvania area, all with educational disabilities, emotional disturbance, autism, all with challenging behaviors. And our job was to educate them, but get them ready to go back to public school. And I became a lead teacher and a high school program coordinator there. So you supervised the high school program there. Again, right place, right time. I had the best mentor anyone could ever ask for in Dr. Michael George. You can look him up. He hung the moon in the field of special education, especially working with kids with challenging behaviors. And just taught me everything that a young man could want and need to know about being a leader, and inspiring other people. And from there, I became an assistant principal at another school district before God put me at the right place and the right time to find an opportunity at Dieruff High School. And the rest is history, man. I did some years at Dieruff, then I went downtown and worked as a director of operations, but I missed the direct contact with kids. And I've been back at Dieruff High School since 2014 and no looking back, you know, and here I am. And, you know, the why, my why is, again, the same why that drew me towards that field is if I can make an impact on young people's lives, I sleep really well at night. And I commit myself completely to that end. But it goes beyond that, because now it's kind of evolved. And if I can inspire and better the adults that are having that direct impact, and that's what educational leadership is all about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is something that flows through my veins, man. I mean, it's a hard game.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
You deal with a lot of obstacles in the educational field. You know, public education is no small task. Urban public education is even harder. Urban public education is an animal in and of itself. And it takes a very special, I tell this to my teachers all the time, not anyone can do your job. It takes a very special somebody to be you and to do you every single day. But you are blessed to have this opportunity every day because your impact is felt in perpetuity, forever.
Absolutely.
You don't even know the ripple effect of your impact and your influence. So make it count. And that's our calling every single day. You can't do that as an individual entity. And this is what I love about what we do. You can't do it as a single entity. You can't do it in a silo. You can only do it effectively and to the highest extent through your connection to other people. And that's what makes Husky Pride, Husky Pride. That's what makes the Husky family and Husky Nation what it is. That's why when we say our goal is to lead and serve with Husky Pride, that phrase, those few words just embody so much of what we do. And, you know, the sad thing is that the general public doesn't see the behind the scenes, in the trenches, granular work that goes on day in and day out. It truly, truly is a labor of love.
Yeah.
Because our teachers face insurmountable obstacles sometimes. We are resource deficient and sometimes human capital deficient and things like that. But we are, you know, commitment rich. We are commitment rich.
I can see it, man.
If you have that, you know, like, doesn't matter what's going to come in front of you. If you have that and a commitment to each other and connection to each other, you can overcome just about anything. Mm-hmm. And I keep drawing their attention to that, especially, I mean, we just wrapped up pre-service. I began this way with this message and I ended this way. It's through our connections to each other that we can overcome whatever is coming at us, and whatever we have overcome, we did it together. Because each one of us has a hidden talent. No one person here can do it all alone. The admin team can't do it alone. You know, the guidance team can't do it alone. Hey, parents, you can't do it alone. And we know that. That's why we can't wait to reconnect with you. And that's our model going into this year, is to reconnect. I mean, we've been apart from each other since March of 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. Ago. Absolutely.
2020.
I mean, we're losing track of years, man, because COVID-19 is really doing that. But right. You're right, man. You got to. It's just like any organization that wants to flourish or that wants to make it through hard times. You got to have a team. You got to have, a goal in mind. And we see it, man. Let me tell you, I'm an Allen alum, you know, but I show love to Husky Nation.
And I'm sorry to hear that.
You know,
I wish you were a part of our lineage, man. That's
Yeah. You know, I show love to you all. My son is over there with you guys, and I entrust each and every one of you to take care of him. But you're right, man. It's inspiring to hear you. And this is the thing. So when I knew that position was up, I already knew that you were the right guy for the job, you know, because just to hear you tonight after probably several months and weeks and days leading up to next week, where you're coming into this COVID-19. Now we're going to get full time. You're working, and to still have that energy tonight as we air this show, it's just wonderful. And everything you're saying is so true. So I commend you on that. Two things we have something in common. So I went into the Navy as an engineer when I joined the Navy. Hold on. Thinking that I wanted to be an engineer. I got to my ship. This is a quick story. I got to my ship and I thought I was going to be nuclear engineering. I thought I was going to go on a carrier, and they ended up putting me on a 30-year-old steamship, which is the, I guess, the beginning, not the beginning, but you know, it's very elementary for engineering, because I mean, everything is still there. It's all circular and everything, but I thought I was going to go to a nuclear engineering or nuclear ship, and it just didn't work out. So I ended up leaving that after 2 years, and like you said, the rest is history. I got into law enforcement in the military, and then the rest is history after that, but we have that in common. And then, you know, like I said earlier, my son goes to Deriff. I'm proud. And even knowing you, of course, I know you, but many, many folks know you as well in the community. But those that don't know you now know that this is a man that is taking this very serious, and you're real. You're real. You're showing it tonight. So let's talk about that, man. You mentioned Husky Nation going in and then COVID-19. So tell us a little bit about both, you know, what to expect this year for Husky Nation and then a little bit about COVID-19, if you want.
Oh man, where to start? Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a little bit of it—the obstacles. We've been disconnected, trying to get everybody kind of back in that the paradigm of, you know, face to face learning, mm-hmm. coupled with on top of like all of these mitigation factors in our health safety plan, and you know we want to make sure everybody is safe. You know, we want to make sure we can't take that lightly. You know, it's a global pandemic. It is real. It is what it is at this point. I think we've all kind of wrapped our, to some extent, head around the reality of our existence right now, right? So there is no perfect red pill or blue pill that can make everything right? But so we're gonna do everything that we possibly can to maximize safety and everybody's well-being. So we have to keep health, safety, welfare at the forefront of everything that we do.
Yeah.
The other thing that we are, you know, extremely focused on is the social emotional impact on kids, and the whether they're micro traumas or you know, full out, you know, adverse childhood experiences. We as adults have to be very cognizant of the fact of how everything we've been through has impacted us emotionally, physically, mentally, you know, the whole nine. Imagine what that could have or did have, how it did impact young developing minds and hearts. Follow me. Walking into school on Tuesday, September 7th, almost one half of my student body would have never stepped into Deriff High School yet.
Wow.
Just kind of like reckon that for a minute. Our freshmen and sophomores have never stepped foot into Deriff High School. Wow. So now instead of one class, you know, acclimating and onboarding one cohort of students, we have two. Our juniors never completed their freshman year, never saw a school year from September to June in whole. So, I mean, that's just enough to blow your brain right there, right? I mean, we have to account for kids' social emotional development and getting them into school mode. What it means to be a student in a system, you know, a 9 through 12 building, you know, they're coming in from, you know, the middle school model, which is very, you know, very different. Now you have, you know, different courses, you have higher expectations, you have a little more challenging type of content, you have different teaching styles, you don't have a team model, you know, of educators. It's something that we have to account for. So what I've told and have emphasized, and our district has emphasized, quite frankly, but particularly our conversations at Husky High, is that we have to account for kids' social emotional learning side by side with their academic content learning. So we're working on enhancing our strategies to embed that in our facilitation content as well. We need to be culturally sensitive, trauma sensitive, and informed, and account for those needs. So that is something that, you know, our community should expect, and understand about our approach this year. It's at the forefront of my mind as principal, and we have done what we could to date, and we're going to continue it to put it at the forefront of our teachers. And I'm sure that that's going to come with growing pains. You know, it's going to come with some growing pains. Yeah. At the same time, teachers have to pivot from being almost, in a sense, 100% virtual teachers to back in the classroom, live instruction, and managing that classroom environment, classroom procedures. You know, again, with books and computers and technology and all that stuff, it's a dance. You know, it's like riding a bike. At first, a little clumsy. So, I'm very, very excited. I always say this about my staff, and I'm glad I can say it on this public forum so the world can know. I would put my Husky faculty and staff side by side up against any high school's faculty and staff in the Greater Lehigh Valley and beyond, with their skill set, their talent, and their commitment to our kids. It's unmatched, man. We have an unparalleled group of talented professionals in that building. Doesn't mean we're perfect, but it means that they are as good, if not better, than anybody else. And they don't get the credit that they deserve. People don't see the work that they do behind the scenes, the commitment they have, and the things that they overcome on a daily basis to do what they need to do.
Yeah. So, and again, this is why I said it, man. When the job was up and the retirement came, and now they're looking for a new leader, man. This is real stuff here, and this is why Socially Connected. This is why I started this podcast, because people need to hear from you, the leader of one of the two biggest high schools in our area, and mention these things, because we take that for granted. Not only the what you stated earlier about, people just think you got to wear masks and we're going to bring, half of the kids, or more than half of the kids, are going to be full time, and the other are virtual. Like, but they don't talk about, what you mentioned earlier about what post-traumatic stress disorder from COVID-19 has this affected the teachers, the students, and all of us. And so that's huge. And then obviously commending your staff and actually, saying that you would challenge any other faculty. That's pretty awesome, man. I love it. So on those two things, the masks, I know a lot of folks are curious about that. How's the masks going to work? Are you still doing you're doing some virtual, right? If students right. want to go virtual.
Yeah. So the district has offered a virtual campus option. Just to kind of ensure that the community knows, they have to apply to that, fill out an application. They meet with their building level administrator and guidance counselor, talk about, what it is, what it isn't, just to ensure that everyone is clear about what it is going into it, what those expectations might be and would be, whether the student is a good fit or match for that, in spite of their concerns about coming back to the building. Listen, I'm not going to make any qualms about it. I think that there's absolutely no substitute for face-to-face instruction. I'm sorry if that offends anybody out there. Sorry, not sorry. There is absolutely no substitute for live, person-to-person, engaging, interactive instruction and teaching and learning. There's just no substitute for that. So I encourage everyone, come. We want you in the flesh, in person, face-to-face, mask or no mask, right? But the district, it has implemented a universal masking policy. Obviously, there's breaks. There are a lot of times, obviously in cafeterias and such. We are implementing masking. We have modified our traffic patterns in our hallways to make sure, to the highest extent practical. Now, when you open your building up to almost 2,000 kids, obviously every hallway in every high school, comprehensive high school in the, anywhere in the nation, there's going to be traffic. Yeah. We're going to be tight, but we want to keep traffic moving. We just don't want people bottleneck in and just hanging out. Nobody's holding up any walls in the halls. You know, we're going to keep it moving. We've done our job to ensure that we've, like I said, maximized our mitigation parameters to the best that we can. And we're adaptable, we're flexible and responsive. We see something, hey, this is not working, we got to pivot, we got to adjust, we got to flex it, we got to move it, we got to do this. We're all about that. So the virtual campus is there. Students will get their core virtually. We have designated and assigned specific teachers to that. They're going to follow a regular bell-like schedule every period to attend those classes. It's not going to be kind of laissez-faire, sign on when I want to. It's going to be kind of a prescribed schedule every single day for every single class they need to be in. And that's definitely going to be a little bit arduous for some kids. But what we don't want is the flip-flopping back and forth. So we want some continuity. You know, anytime a kid breaks time from one paradigm to the next, you know, we can account for some learning loss. We don't want any more learning loss. We've had enough in the last year and a half. So we're going to hold that true to the end of the marking period, keep tabs on our kids as much as possible, monitor their progress, their growth, and try to push it and facilitate it as high as we possibly can. But for everyone else, right now, DRF has just under 120 kids registered for Virtual Academy, which isn't so bad.
How many?
About 120 that have been fully processed and accepted into the virtual campus. Mm-hmm. I suspect and I worry and I'm paranoid that number will continuously grow. Mm-hmm. Secret that, you know, COVID numbers are creeping up. They're higher now than they were at a certain point last year. You know, that doesn't make anybody feel good. That's definitely concerning for our community, particularly in Allentown, where we have a very population dense community. That's concerning. But like I said, we're going to do everything that we possibly can. We have hand sanitizing stations in every single classroom. We have them in the hallways. We have touch-free water dispensers instead of water fountains, touch-free bottle dispensing water fountains. You're giving a water bottle to every student. That sort of thing. And we just try to put in universal precautions. So I'm really proud of the work that the district has implemented and done to this point. We got to stay on our toes. We got to be ever mindful and cognizant of that. If we do have students who feel sick and ill, we have a process and procedure for that, to isolate it, to trace it if we need to make sure that, you know, we don't become a super spreader, you know, for lack of better words. You know, that, and again, like you said it, Louis, I'm not going to come on your show with a shirt and tie type and act all prim and proper. I'm going to keep it real.
It's important.
I don't know how to be anyone other than myself. Just keeping it real. All of this, I didn't go to school for this. I don't know how to be a COVID principal. There is no book for this. There is no textbook for this. It probably will be in another year or two. Like, maybe I should write a book. Damn.
Yeah. That's we gotta do this, man. We gotta do it.
But you know, there is no pre-script for this. You know, this is all stuff that we're learning and implementing as we go.
Absolutely.
And you know, that's one of the things about that makes, you know, education, it's one of the expectations of a professional educator, is that you're flexible and responsive to the needs of your students and the environment. And so that's what we do, and that's what we're going to do. And
absolutely.
I'm looking forward to the people that we have doing what they do. That's what I told them. The thing that I'm looking forward to most is just watching and learning and observing everyone do what they do, students and staff alike.
It's gonna be great coming back. What about sports, real quick? Let's talk a little bit about, just real quick. I only have two more questions, but sports. Are we gonna go full back on sports? I know kids are excited to get back. You had some summer leagues. You had a really good season last year in basketball. And I mean, to a certain extent, but it looked good. You guys look good.
You know, one of the things I firmly believe in is if you can enhance your athletic programs, your extracurricular programs across the board, but sports play a prominent role in that. What do? You increase engagement. You make school a place that people want to come and be a part of. You instill that culture, that climate, that, you know, that pride in your school. When you feel that permeate the halls for student athletes and non-student athletes alike, what do kids want to do? They want to come to school.
Yeah.
When they come to school, they're learning, right? So I have a direct connect to extracurriculars and an increase in student achievement. So one of the things that I am dead set on is investing in and capitalizing on enhancing our athletic programs across the board. That's not a simple task in Allentown. And again, hear me just being real with you. We don't have the type of feeder programs that some of our suburban friends have. We don't have, our parents and household don't have the resources to sign their kids up or ability to take them to, you know, private leagues and you know, CYOs and the traveling leagues and such. So that puts our kids oftentimes at a disadvantage in their developmental growth and skill development in athletics.
Yeah.
And that's something that we need to build our community around. Mm-hmm. We need to engage our community leaders around. Our youth programs need to come back. Our middle school programs need to come back. And I'm proud to say that, you know, we're starting to have that level of engagement with the community at large to build our feeder programs, our youth sports, because I think people truly understand the value of that. And as we see that continuously increase, I think we'll see a re-engagement at new levels and new heights. We'll see a more juice being pumped into our athletic programs. But we also have to give our kids fair and level playing fields and the resources to play at places that their suburban peers play at. So there is an effort right now to enhance some of our athletic fields. And so I won't talk too much about that right now because they're in the infantile stage, but we've made a lot of concerted effort and work to engage community partners in that bigger conversation. I'm really looking forward to that because I think it's going to be something that's going to be profound, not just for Deerfield High School, but for the city at large. And I think that there's a lot of potential that we're sitting on that we're not tapping into yet. But our coaches are unbelievably talented coaches and committed coaches. Again, they overcome obstacles that most coaches don't have to overcome. But yet their heart is fully in it. And what more can a leader ask for, right? I mean, so if you're out there and you see a fundraiser for one of our athletic programs, or if you want to give a helping hand to a sport or a coach or a set of athletes, please reach out and let us know. The more the merrier. Again, through our connections to each other, we will provide our students with the educational resources, supports, and opportunities to chase their dreams. That's our mission statement, you know, to empower them with the skills and abilities to fulfill the career pathway or college pathway of their choice. Sports plays a prominent role in that. It played a prominent role in your life. It played a prominent role in my life.
Absolutely.
And so we're committed to that. I have an amazing athletic director in Dave Stout, you know, Deerfield alum, phenomenal athlete in his time. And, you know, he bleeds blue and gray. And so he's doing everything he can to support coaches and move obstacles out of their way. He and I have been working extremely well together and committed to doing everything we can to enhance our all of our sports.
Yeah.
Recently, Deerfield and Allen just engaged in a co-op program for field hockey and soccer. Neither school had enough to fill full roster for those sports.
Wow.
And rather than not having a season at any given school, we want to give our kids the opportunity to play. So it's
unity.
Unity. I mean, it's not something that we, you know, that comes easy, right?
That's unity, man. Let's do it. I'm ready, man.
We're getting over the bridge, man.
I've been trying to do this. We bring unity games to you. We bring unity games, man.
It doesn't come easy for God.
I know.
great, but our young ladies who play field hockey will play for the Allen Canary team, and the Allen Canary girls who play soccer will play for the Deer Huskies.
Wow.
You know, it's an opportunity to keep kids playing, keep kids learning, growing in the sport. And so we appreciate the PIAA for accepting that. And we're excited at the prospect of that. Hopefully it leads to bigger. Well, if you think about it, that's another impact of COVID-19.
Yeah.
We haven't had FaceTime with our kids in almost, 20 months or something, right? So when you don't have that FaceTime with kids, you don't have a time to recruit. You don't have a time to kind of get them involved. You don't have a time to do intramurals, to engage them in the skills and drills and things like that pique their interest. They don't see their friends playing. And so they don't know about field hockey. It's not like Allentown is busting with field hockey teams everywhere. You know what I mean? So I think that getting back in the mix of everything, we'll be able to kind of build upon the momentum that we've established now.
Yeah. And shout out to the Booster Club, man. You have one of the best Booster Clubs, Mr. John Hughes and that team.
Alumni Association.
The Alumni Association, excuse me. I thought that, they do a lot of fundraising too. And they're just great and capturing and it's just great to see them. I remember, when I was supported or helped, the basketball team and then I'll bring you back. Cause I know we could talk about the APD Unity game. I just not the on the show. We did the APD Unity game with Daref Unity game for about seven. It just would have been the seventh year. And I remember you being on the mic and talking smack I miss all of that. I am 0-6. I admit that here on SC360. I did miss, I think, two game winners. And then Fernando hit a wonderful.
Oh, we're in your grill, man.
Oh, my gosh, man. I remember. Well, I tied up the game just to recap everybody. And I have the videos to show you. Okay. We were down by six.
You have to play that.
I hit a three. From the top, from the key, and boom, and it was like 30 seconds left. We get the ball back. I'm in the corner. I hit another three. So now everybody's going nuts. It's just like, this is crazy. We had a tie game. And then the coach Jarjuice, God bless him. He actually didn't coach at all. First of all, the entire game. All right. Let's be real. And then he draws up the best play, an out of bounds play, and Fernando hits an NBA three in my face to end the game. And at first I was like,
hey,
come on, man.
For the books.
Come on, man. And then I was like, wait a minute. I'm a 30 some year old man.
I saw your heart drop, man.
And I started cheering.
I think for the next month, every other one of your social media posts, your Facebook posts, was about that game and you losing. I mean, you were so about that. Hey, man, we got to bring that game back, man.
We'll bring it back.
You're going to make it 0-7 for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably going to happen too. And so folks know we don't play against each other. We do a ceremony in the beginning of the game. We switch five players to show the unity. We also raise money to acknowledge two or three folks in the community that have done well. So it's a game that really before everything started in our nation, because we know there have been problems with police and the community. But 7 years ago, we started this and it was about us bridging the gap. And again, another initiative trying to show the kids that, hey, we're human and we want you to see us in this light and we care about you. And it just turned out to be a great event. So maybe we'll bring that back. So we're excited.
One of my favorite parts of that game, I'm sorry to cut you off here, but I got to say this just to capitalize on your point is not the actual playing, but.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Pre-game conversation and pep talk that I give the kids in a room full of cops.
Mm.
And, we had, up the highest levels of the Allentown Police Department, which is, hands down one of the best police departments in the nation. I mean, I've worked with you guys through and through. You guys have phenomenal, phenomenal crew. And I couldn't be more proud than to work with you all. By and large, every organization has issues,
mm-hmm.
but you guys are extremely community oriented and community based. And one of the most profound moments is sitting in a room with my male and female athletes in a room full of officers and giving them a pep talk about what this game is all about. And, you know, what does unity in our community mean? What does the word community mean? We're literally coming into union with each other and becoming one. And that symbolic gesture, half court of taking off the shirts and exchanging shirts, was so proud. I was just so proud to be a part of it, be a leader for part of that, and to announce the game side by side with the time Captain Granitz, and then, you know, eventually becoming the top dog. And it was a great time just to work with you. I mean, you were so impactful and influential in that, and from day one. And so we got to resurrect that, bring it back, and make it even better. Marlon JT Randall, excellent coach. The prospect of his potential hasn't even been tapped yet. Coach Piston, one of the most dedicated educators you'll find anywhere. Best math teacher probably in the world. Leads that girls basketball team. Just led an initiative to get us a new shooting machine for both of our boys and girls team. Thank you to the community and everyone who donated.
Wonderful.
You know, we're on to some really good things here, man. I'm a proud principal of Deerfield High School.
Awesome. And so I just want to say this. I think Jameel Newsom needs that shooting machine because, if you're watching this, Newsom, you know I got a better jump shot. Officer Newsom. You know I got a better jump shot than you, bro.
Baby Jay, right? You got a killer cross.
Yeah, he's awesome. But yeah, you're right, man. We got to bring it back. So two more things real quick. You posted something before COVID, which I thought was amazing. And I know that you probably did it throughout the year. I saw you doing some rapping.
Oh, man.
In the morning times, I heard you doing some rapping, like to the kids in the intercom. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, you know, I started this thing with, like, Freestyle Fridays. You know, it just, I don't know, it just came to me. You know, I'm a hip hop fan too. You know, I just I have very eclectic taste of music, but I would just be like, kind of, you know, jamming to some music and stuff. Put on a beat, whatever, and I would just start rapping in my car about something that was on my mind. And then I would, you know, thank God for technology, and I pull out the phone, I would just start talking to text, like, so I don't forget this freestyle. I would just freestyle, I would send it to myself, and then I would be like, you know what, I'm gonna do this to the school. And just kind of talking to them about, you know, just embedding wisdom and just kind of kicking some knowledge, you know. And maybe we'll bring that back a little bit too.
Man, that's dope, man. I remember seeing, I'm like, my man is really doing that, man. He's really doing it. Like, that's
great. Took on a new flavor, you know.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. All right. So tell me, this is a question I ask all of my guests. You got one piece of advice. 19 years old, baby Mac.
I'm 19 years old.
Yeah, baby Mac. Okay. What do you tell little Mac about life? You got one piece of advice. You can go back in time and tell him something.
Man, how do you pick one?
Hey, you could pick a couple, but
I think something. What I would say is, don't be afraid of the struggle, man. I would say embrace the struggle, you know, and the time is now. Like those two pieces. You know, like, you know, you were talking about being an engineer. You know, I took a physics class and it was like the hardest class in my life. I was like, this ain't for me, you know, but I was afraid of the struggle a little bit, you know, I'm just keeping it real. But other things, you know, like the fear of the unknown, the fear of how hard something is going to be when you're a young person, you shy away from that, you know, because it's too hard. There are YouTube videos galore that talk about the struggle, right? But I think in that struggle is where you grow. And we should embrace that opportunity. As a man, I embrace that opportunity now, but I still stutter step. You're not human if you don't. And so have the courage to embrace the struggle In the gym, we say embrace the suck, right? Embrace the suck. Some things are not going to feel comfortable. But if it's not uncomfortable, it means you're not growing. Mm. And so embrace that. And that mindset of now's the time. The time is always now. You know, in my office as an assistant principal, I created a clock. And at every hour mark, it said now. Time stops for no one. You don't have yesterday. You don't have tomorrow yet. You have right this minute right now. And you need to live in the now, right now, because that's all you can control. So the most important thing is to be present and mindful, embrace the struggle in the now, and commit yourself to it fully. Don't shy away, because you never know when you're going to turn away an opportunity that could change the trajectory of the rest of your life. And again, I was blessed to be there at certain points in my life and embrace the opportunity. And that's why I am right here. I'm not better than anybody else. I just was blessed to embrace an opportunity. But I think back sometimes to other opportunities that I may have passed up on because I was afraid of what I thought would be something too difficult, too hard. Mm. So that would be my
embrace. Embrace the struggle, folks. I tell you, man, you got to have your own podcast. You got to start doing these videos, man, because you're inspiring me. And you know me, man, I'm ready to go every day. 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm embracing that struggle. So 5 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, I'm waking up lately, right? I started.
You wake me up. You can call me and hit me up, man. I'm not a morning guy.
What I'm saying is in that moment, I'm struggling. And so there's a young person that needed to hear what you just said, man. You got to embrace the struggle. It's like trying to wake up at, like I said, I can give you that analogy, right? You gave a couple analogies. I give you the analogy I'm going through right now. I know tomorrow morning, I'm not going to want to get out of that bed. I'm going to stay there. I'm going to say, man, I worked out twice yesterday. I'm good. No, like you said, we live right now. We live today, right? And so a 19-year-old baby Mac had to hear that. And that's why I asked the question, man, because we can't emphasize it enough, right? We're here on this earth for such a short period of time. And for you to inspire folks and you being in that high school, and obviously my son being in that high school, I know he's being led by a person that's inspirational. And I thank you for that, man. So on that note, I know people can find you at Daruff. Is there anywhere else, you know, obviously if somebody needs your help, I know you're on social media, where can people find you? Daruff High School or?
Yeah. You know, my email and contact information at the school is public. You know, it's my last name, McCool M at AllentownSD.org. You can find me on LinkedIn. That's my professional social media, platform. I reserve the other ones just for my personal life. I would love to, again, draw in more community within our means to the school, really anything that would positively impact our students and benefit our culture, our climate, our community. I'm willing to at least lend an ear to and embrace. If we can tie a direct connect to that in our school improvement plan, I'm all about it. If there are other opportunities that I can be a part of in the community on a private level, if it benefits, again, if it benefits people and moves people from point A to point B, I'm all about it. I look forward to that opportunity, man. Hey, I just want to say again, I'm humbled by the opportunity to come and speak. We should do this like on a recurring basis, you know, come up with a theme and just rap about it. I'm all about it, man. I definitely would be willing. Thank you
so much for being on the show, man. Like I said, you're someone that I look up to. Folks, connect with this leader. All right. That's what he is. Simple as that. A leader in our community, a leader in our educational system here. Someone that I think in the future is going to ascend to lead the district, in my opinion. I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there in the future. So don't nobody get nervous right now. But hey, I don't know. That's the trajectory that I'm seeing. But I want to say thank you again for being on SC360 number 18. You're someone that I look up to, man. And again, thank you so much. There you have it, folks. Number 18 is in the books. Be safe, everybody.
Great work, man.
Stay hungry, everybody. Be safe.